How's everybody?
Good. So happy to have you on. One of my favorite humans in the world.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You guys will love him too.
I feel the same about you.
Thank you. And that's Corey. I don't know if you know Corey Favell.
How you doing, Ian?
Hi, Corey. I'm good. How you doing?
Good, good, good. You were also one of my favorite players when you came into the league.
Oh, stop it. Hey, you guys talk. I feel good about myself, you know?
The Perrant Favell Generation X podcast is powered by
Biscuit Teas and Favell Fitness,
bringing you unique comfort and style while optimizing a healthy, organic lifestyle.
Oh, I'm blushing right now.
What I do is I train kids 14, 15, 16 going into major junior hockey here in Ontario. Mm-hmm. Every kid has their eyes set on the OHL or the Q. And just what I tell my kids is, and I think maybe this is kind of the same boat you were in, was everybody gets to that major junior level. Everybody's very, very skilled. But what sets you aside from that next guy, be the hardest working guy out there, you know, you finish your checks. The game has changed a bit, but I wanted to ask you, you had so many points. You were an amazing, I was telling John and Kim, like you were a superstar in the queue. When did you realize, start making that transition into, okay, I got to, you know, do something a little different here?
Well, it was my first year in St. Louis. I got drafted by the Blues in 1992 and went up there. And at the beginning of camp, they give you one of those booklets with all the players that are going to be in camp and draftees and what their stats were. You know, guys who play in college, play in junior and Western League and Ontario League. And you look at those stats and everybody's got pretty good stats, like, you know, close to what I had or even better.
Yeah.
But and that's when I realized, I'm like, okay. And I used to use that phrase to when I did player development with our young guys. And I do use it to, you know, my kids, my own kids. The phrase is like, what are you willing to do that the guy next to you is not willing to do?
Yeah.
Because at one point, like you said, everybody comes up and everybody's a pretty good player. Okay, we all have goal scorers in junior colleges, you know, point getters and everything. But what are you willing to do to stick around, to first of all, to make it and to stick around? You know, you hear it often. It's one thing to make it to the NHL, but to play 17 years, you need to do something that other guys are not willing to do. And for me, it was you know, being a physical player, block shots, you know, step up for my teammates. And I took pride of that. It wasn't too hard for me because in junior, I kind of did it a little bit. But when I turned pro, I'm like, all right, it's going to be my chair. It's going to be my role. And I'm going to do everything I can and be proud of doing it. And it worked out for me.
Yeah. Any memories going into that St. Louis camp, your very first year? Did you have, you know, was there a first fight? Was there like...
No. I'll tell you my memory. I got a good memory. And when I see these guys, we talk about it too. And everybody knows Brendan Shannon. He was in St. Louis. Nelson Emerson was in St. Louis. Kelly Chase, a tough guy, was out. They were all in St. Louis. That was my era.
Yeah.
And I'm 18 years old and... wing camp and back then was pretty much only scrimmages. They want to see who stands out. And I remember Nelson Emerson was just a big college free agent, not big literally, but there was a big college free agent they just signed and he was a big star there. And he goes in the corner and he tries to make a move to beat me and he turns right into me and I crushed him. Like I played with Nelly later in life. Yeah. But we laugh about it now, but I crushed him and whistle blow. And I remember his face. He's down on his back and he's looking at me like, what are you doing? And fair enough, they blow the whistle. I'm going to the bench and Brendan Shannon jumps on the ice. Kelly Chase jump on the ice and they come after me. That's between the whistles.
Oh, you know, wow.
Spare me. And I'm 18 years old. I just want to go home. I'm crying. I'm like, Mom, come get me. I'm sitting on the bench and Bobby Bassin, who was an older veteran, a tough guy, like a really good teammate, was on my team, obviously, and stood up and started giving it to them, like, you know, like the kids trying to make a good impression. You guys should quiet down. And it was, you know, everybody calmed down. But trust me, you're 18-year-old and you piss everybody off on your first day of camp.
Yeah.
You make a name for yourself, though. You're like, right. You know, I'm not saying that's why I made it, but you want to be noticed out there. That was my way to be noticed. Maybe I took it a little bit too far, but, you know, it worked out.
So did you literally call your mom crying?
No, I did not, but I didn't sleep that well. Then, you know, like back then, fighting was part of it. Like today's not as much, but camp were crazy. And I'm thinking the next day, I'm like, oh my God, what's going to happen to me? But I came out in one piece after that camp.
Well, I tell you, if I was in the stands or if I was part of the scouting staff, I would have checked you off and said, that kid's not going anywhere. You know,
you know what? I think they kick you off because you're going. If you want to get noticed, and you do get noticed, and you go after big guys, and you don't care what their names on the back, that's all people notice you. I'm sure they thought the opposite. Like, well, this kid doesn't give a, you know what?
Yeah, showing
he's
no fear.
Do everything to make this team, and and that was always my even later in my career. I've always took pride. Like I knew, like in camp, I'd fight once. Just even after 15 years in the league, I'd fight in preseason just to show everybody up there that I'm not changing. Right. I'm still going to be who I am. And that's what I guess made me stick around that long.
Any fights that you regret starting?
Oh, many, many, many fights. I went too often above my weight class, if you want. And everybody remember Bob Probert, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
One of the scary men. And we're in Chicago. I'm with the Kings, and Larry Robinson's our coach. And we're on the ice, and I'm running around. I've been running around all night, and we're up 4-1. And fair enough, I know I love Larry Robinson. He's one of the nicest person you'll ever meet, but I don't know why he put me out there with 2 minutes to go when we're up 4-1, and I've been a passed all night. And and back then, you remember Chicago, they had Proby, but they had Russell, they had Cummins, they had Basil McRae, they had
Vandenbosch. They had Vandenbosch.
Well, that was a little bit before Bushy, I think. Maybe, but he wasn't on the ice, though. And fair enough, I go for the face that I was playing in the middle back then. And on their left, it's Basil McRae. On the other side, it's Russell. On D, they have two tough guys. And they have Jeff Shentz in the middle taking the face off, who's not a tough guy. And fair enough, they have the last change. We're in Chicago. And fair enough, Bobby Probert comes on to take the face off. I looked at him before. I'm like, I'm not fighting you, buddy. He's like, and he told me, shut the F up. I'm like, there's trouble coming my way. And fair enough, the ref didn't have a chance to drop the puck. He crushed me right in the face and was a big 5-on-5 brawl. And thank God I mentioned Basil McRae was on the left wing there. I played with him in St. Louis the year before and 2 years before. And he grabbed me right away and he put me down and he was like, Lappy, stay down. I'm like, yep, I think I'm going to stay.
Hey, it's good to have friends.
Yeah, it is good to be nice to the tough guys. That's another advice to the young guys out there. Be nice to the tough guys. Always pays off down the road.
And the refs.
And the refs. Yeah. You're right.
That's funny. Stay down.
I remember when my dad was coaching the Sabres in Buffalo, we'd always walk through the arenas and I'd walk with him before the games. And sometimes somebody called, hey, Fab, and he'd stop and shake their hands. And he always said, he goes, that's one of the toughest guys you'll ever meet. He goes, you always stop and shake a tough guy's hand.
That's smart advice.
Yeah, thankfully my dad was never in those situations.
No, your dad was worried about one thing, stopping the little black thing.
That's right.
Good for him. It worked out for him.
It did. And speaking of him and you, both from Montreal, I'm assuming you watched the game the other night.
I did.
How crazy was that?
Crazy. I'm happy. I know the coaching staff in Montreal. I'm happy for them. They're good people. And you know, it's just, you know, when you're underdog and you do have a goalie like Carey Price, you know, you can create, you know, you can create surprises like they did. And Toronto, you know, they had all the pressure in the world. And I don't care how good you are, pressure will get to you.
For sure.
And it did. You know, I wouldn't want to be in Toronto this morning.
I'm from St. Catharines, Ontario. So I'm right around the lake. So I'm you know, force fed the Leafs. But that was something I was going to talk to you too about is when they brought in Kyle Dubas and, you know, they let Mark Hunter go. Mark Hunter really helps out some of my athletes in London with the Knights, his brother Dale. I think Basil McRae is up in with the London Knights as well.
He owns part of it. Oh, he used to. I don't know if he's still.
Yeah. So when they brought in Dubas and Keith and these guys, real number guys, but did they miss the aspect of, you know, Mark Hunter, and they can, they're hunters and they see those players for what they're worth. And I always see with the Leafs, the Mariners, and those guys just don't have that. Once it hits the playoffs, it's a different level. And like I said, Marner cutting across the middle, you know, losing that puck, that goal that went in. These guys have so much confidence, but they're young kids, you know.
They're young kids. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But they play the same way in the playoffs that they played all year, and it worked out for them. And that's wrong. That's what happened when you play loosey-goosey hockey and you do little turnovers in the season. Yeah, it doesn't really cost you anything, but in the playoffs, it's a little bit tighter. Mm-hmm. And you hear the cliche of it's not a switch you can't turn on and off. And that's another example. You have to play the right way all year, and it's going to pay off in the playoffs. And, you know, I'm not a day-to-day with Toronto Maple Leafs, but I watch them play enough that I see it. And again, Mark Hunter is a really smart guy. Like my best friend is Joel Bouchard, and he worked with him with Team Canada, and he said this guy knows his stuff, and that's great. But it was before the Mariners and the Matthews showed up. Toronto's been struggling in the playoffs for years now. Like, it's been crazy, like how many game sevens they lost. And to put it on those two guys would be unfair, I feel. I think it's more like a mentality they have to change, a style of play they have to change. You know, maybe you remember when Stevie Y went to Detroit at first, like, you know, he was getting points, but he wasn't playing the right way and they weren't winning. Yep. And he made a decision, like, I'm going to, with Jacques Demers, I think, help him out to make that decision that I might have a little bit less points, but we're going to win. And he turned that franchise around. And I feel like Toronto, they need to do that. They need to have guys realize that, okay, I might get 30 goals instead of 50, but we'll play the right way.
Yeah.
And I feel that's right. And again, I'm not there every day. I don't want to judge other team. I have enough career with our team. But from the outside, that's what I see.
Well, on the other end, I'm super happy for my family up in Montreal that we're
I know.
Got that surprise win. No one expected. So
no one.
I'm happy for them.
My mom texts me too. She's pumped too. Everybody back home.
Yeah.
Pretty excited. And it's great with what's going on in the world right now to bring happiness to our people.
Yes.
That's nice. Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how they do in the next round.
Yeah. That's going to be you know what? Carey Price is amazing.
That's what I was just going to say.
He covers so many mistakes. He makes it look so easy. And you read the quotes about him. The players talk about him, how great they feel playing. Sorry.
No worries. It's fine. We have dogs. We're used to it.
That could be in a rubber house. I felt bad for Jack Campbell and, you know, Kim and myself, our fathers being goalies, you know, he broke down, was crying. And all I could think about was, why did Marner cut across the middle, not being heavy on a stick like that? That's what I looked at. Like, Campbell, you can't, you know, don't be hard on yourself. My dad's let in bad goals. I'm sure Kim's dad didn't let in too many bad ones, but
there were a few.
he got so emotional. I was like, man, it just, you know, shake it off.
I'll give him props that he's taking the heat. He's taking the blame, but I feel like he's taking all the blame, which he shouldn't.
How old is
somebody
he?
Somebody else should. Yeah. He's 28, 27. He's not that young. He was playing with Nick Cousin, same team in junior. He's going to be 27, 28. He's not that young.
Right.
And but I feel like, you know, I watched just like you guys on TSN his interview there, but I feel like somebody should step up and say, listen, he's, you know, everybody's got a part of the blame to take here. And, you know, it's easy to blame it on the goalie, but there were a bunch of mistakes, like you pointed out, the Marner turnover right in front of him. And, you know, you can't do that in the playoffs. And again, during the regular season, you might get by because guys are not as tight, as not as physical. But in the playoffs, another example, it doesn't work.
And then again, on the other end, you have a goalie that's standing on his head and seems like nothing can get past him no matter what. And Price was doing that. He's in it. Once he's in the zone, it's like he's like a magnet.
He's a magnet, but for the other team, it's like a mental barrier that you know you won't be able to pass. And he's got that calm demeanor, you know, like he's looking at guys when they skate by, like, good luck scoring against him. It's crazy. It's crazy. And St. Gallagher said he's the best. No, Thompson for Winnipeg, he said he's the best goalie in our era. And I agree with that. Like, you know, he's taking a lot of heat back home sometimes because of the salary he makes. But ask anybody around the league, even if his numbers don't show this year, who's the best goalie? And I bet you 90% of the guys would say, you know, Price.
Yeah. And it's funny because my dad or my mom would say she loved when there was a breakaway when my dad was playing. She's like, because I couldn't wait to see what kind of awesome save he was going to make. You know, that's how you know it's a good
goal. Yeah, I'm sure the wives and the fans like that, but coaches, they don't.
No. That's
no. Well, let's say, Kim, you can attest to it, is a goalie can make a complete difference in a series. Like Kim's dad, they won two cups back to back and stood on his head. So that's why I really believe you hit a hot goalie in the playoffs. And you said it gets in your head, right? So,
well, it gets in your head and show me, and you know, it's a cliche and we, you know, everybody joke about it, even in the meetings a couple of years ago, coaches meetings, and that was Daryl Sutter who brought it up. And you're like, show me a good goalie, I'll show you a good coach. You know, that's the ultimate position that will cover a lot of mistakes. You know,
yeah.
And there's so many examples in the past. Like, name me one team. I go back maybe Detroit. Like, Osgood was a good goalie, but he didn't steal anything there. I'm sure he still games here and there. But you look in the past, Stanley Cup champions. You know, not too many teams won cups without good goaltending.
Yeah.
Or great goaltending.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you know what? And not to, because this isn't our focus to talk about like the current team and all that, but just we have to like throw it in there that like I think Hart is still going to be our incredible. I think mentally he had a tough year with everything going on. He got in his head, but I think he's incredible.
He's 21 years
he's
old.
He's so young. Yeah.
He's a baby.
With so much like, pressure, you know, put on him.
Defensemen and goalies, they're primer. Like Carey Price, when we played in the finals in 2010, he was backing up because he couldn't play. Well, not couldn't play, but he wasn't as good as Alec.
Right.
And he was 23 years old. Carter's 22 or 21 years old. Like,
yeah.
I know, like, it's, and again, that's a tough market because of your dad, Kim, you know, for goalies, you know, it's tough. Right. These are big shoes to fill. But at the end of the day, he's just a baby and he's going to learn from this year. He's going to go home, train, and, you know, reset. Like a lot of guys, again, it's not the only guy. A lot of guys struggled this year.
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to go home, reset, and come back with a fresh start and, you know, be better.
Yeah, I'm excited for him. And my dad wasn't 21 when he was winning cups and stuff. You know, he was, it's just so young for a goalie.
It is.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
It is.
Dominic Hasek was another one. He backed up Eddie Belfour in Chicago. Nobody knew who Dominic Hasek was. He came to Buffalo and he was 39.
Came late. Exactly. Yeah, he came here late.
Yeah. 39 years old. Late. So.
Yeah.
So we got faith in Hart, I think.
Yes.
You know, he'll just get better and better and better.
I just think he's, I love him.
More.
I love him. Yeah.
Ian, sorry for cutting in. I was curious, what were you doing at 21?
Yeah, where were you?
I was in St. Louis at 21. I was playing for the Blues and I had a full head of hair, believe it or not.
And, I don't think I can picture you with hair.
It's funny, there's pictures out there. I got a full head of hair.
I got to find some of those. Yeah, you carry having no hair so well, though. Like, I just couldn't,
you know. I've been shaving, like, even before, like, I started shaving at 24, 25, just for the look, you know, the role I was playing, whatever. It's mental issues I have. But I'm like, I got a round head. I'm going to keep it like that. And I tried to grow it a couple of years ago, but I had a couple of bald spots. They weren't there before. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I'll keep shaving.
So was it a superstitious thing with the shaving?
It was more like the role, if you want. Like, I wasn't an heavyweight tough guy goon, but I was there to try to scare the, try to be as scary as I could. And, you know, 195 pounds, I wasn't that scary. I had to have some kind of look. My nose kind of got bent a couple times, and I'm like, you know, I was like, you know what? I'll shave my head. They're going to match perfectly.
I always laugh too because my dad always said, he goes, it's the smaller guys you got to look out for because they're fiery and sometimes you take on more than you can handle because it's the size of the, you know, the fight and the dog, not the dog and the fight, right? So
I can't agree more. There's big guys out there that, you know, they didn't scare me because I knew they didn't have it in him and them.
Yeah.
And, but you got guys like Rob DeMaio, smaller guy.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about him.
He's tough. He was tough.
Yeah.
Oh, he was very tough. Yeah.
Really tough.
Yeah.
Now, coming, just maybe think of my dad being in Montreal. And when he came down here, he didn't know a word of English. He's a different generation than you because they didn't learn English in school. So he came down not speaking a word of English at like 18. When you came down, had you already Did you know any English?
Nope. Well, I knew apple, plum, you know, like things like that. But no, not really. I played in Drummondville for 4 years in junior, and Drummondville's then an English-speaking town. And the following year, my last year, and I started in Peoria, went a lockout in 1994 because I couldn't play. They sent me to their farm team. And I lived with two French guys, but they were great to me, Danielle LaPerriere and Patrice Tardif. They were great to me because they helped me with my English, but they forced me to do it. Like if I needed to lease my car, they'll be next to me on the phone. If I need help with the words, they'll tell me what to say, but they kind of, they push me. And being around like, you know, 95% of English people in the locker room really helped me out just to, I can't get rid of my French accent. I don't know why it's still there after 27 years of being in the States, but you know, it's, I guess it's a charm. I'll keep it.
Keep it. My dad still has his. It's not as heavy, but it's still there. And I would hate if he lost it.
I was just going to say, if you run into Bernie Perrant, do you guys speak French or do you guys speak English, Ian?
He's funny because he goes right to English. I speak French to him and he's like, oh, you know, I'm a little bit more comfortable in English.
He'll forget, he forgets words and he'll like,
I know.
If he's talking to like my relatives.
You know, yeah. The best.
Yeah, and you guys have a good relationship, you and my dad. You always remind me so much of my dad, just your personality and just your energy. And I think that's why I'm so drawn to you. But
I'll take that as a compliment.
It's the highest. It's the highest compliment you can get. So
thank you.
Perfect.
All right. So you came down. You didn't speak much English. Were you scared about that or?
Not really. You know what? I wasn't scared because I knew I was going there to play hockey and let hockey speak for itself.
Right.
You know, for sure around and, you know, first couple of times you go around. But I was always around those two guys. They were there to help me out. They were older than me. They knew what it took for me to learn the language. And the transition was really easy because of those two guys.
Oh, that's good.
I can't thank them enough.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the guy's chirpy and you had no idea what they were saying out there when you first
came. Yeah, well, you kind of knew, like, you do have the vibe, like, what kind of direction. And I take their number, and if I had a chance to put my shoulder into their chest, I would.
I love that about you. Yeah,
go ahead, Cor.
Sorry, go. No, go ahead, Kim.
No, it's just, you're another one of those players like Jonesy. We had Jonesy on last week, and who didn't play here very long, but... No. It feels to the fans and the city that you've been here forever and the city just embraced you like completely, just like with Jonesy. It feels like he's just and like it's just so cool that you ended up staying here and, you know, living here. And I just
what brought you
into Philly? Like, what made you want to stay?
Yeah, I'm Philly 12 months out of the year. That's home for us.
Yeah.
It's surreal for me, Kim. Like, you know, like you said, I played 17 years in the league and 1 year in Philly. And, you know, I got injured twice. And the last one pretty much took my career away from me. But I was 37 years old when I made the decision of retiring and because I couldn't play. I would have loved to keep playing until – I always said, like, I'd play until my body breaks down, and it did.
Right.
They sent me a message, and I was done. And I'm like, you know what? My kids are teenagers. I got to stay somewhere. We wanted to stay in the States. I'm like, I love it here. It's great. I'm like, we built a house here in South Jersey. And Omer grabbed me when I retired. And he's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I'd love to stay in the game. I love the game. I want to coach. And I want to stay in the game. And he's like, listen, you can't coach right now because you have 2 years left on your deal. But I'll give you good advice. Just go see our young guys. These are the future of the Flyers. You might coach them down the road, but go do your thing. Go see your kids in junior and Sault Ste. Marie and Kitchener and whatever. Just do. And he put me on a schedule. And for 2.5 years, I did player development. And it worked out. Like, even before Omer offered me a job, we decided to make South Jersey home, which we love. We still love today. And for us, it's home.
And Homer, he's another one. Another just great guy.
Oh, if it's not for Omer, I'm not here, Kim. He called me as a free agent. He really wanted me to give me a good contract to take care of me and my family. I was happy. And when I took my last puck to the eye there, he was emotional. And he pretty much told me he'd help me out. And everything he promised me happened and more. I can. This man, I'll never say a bad word about that man. And if you know, I'll fight for him every other week. He's the best.
And do you get to see him? Do you like get to see him around town and stuff?
Yeah, I golfed with him last year, and I'm going to golf with him this summer. He had knee surgeries. I'm waiting for him to. I guess he's moving around like crazy. I checked on him quite a bit. I'll check on him after we're done here.
Well, he's a happy grandfather too.
I know that's what he is. He's taking care of the babies and everything. They're great people.
Oh, his wife and my mom were on a bowling league together, so they got really close.
I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that.
They loved it. So yeah, we've been close with their family my whole lives, and they're awesome. Like you said, awesome people. I mean, that's the hockey community. There's just so many amazing people that, like Corey and I, like doing this podcast. So many that we were like fortunate enough to meet growing up and in that world, and everyone, there's just so many incredible people. We're really fortunate.
That's the thing with hockey, like we're not that many in the game, like you know, you think about it, but the bad ones get weed out, you know, like they don't stick around, people don't connect with them, but most of the people I'd say in our game are pretty good people.
Yeah, and Philly seems to keep the best somehow. Around.
Well, it says a lot about Paul Holmgren too, because a lot of players have trouble transitioning from the game into, you know, regular life again, right? So something like that, Paul coming to you and just saying, listen, you know, I'll take care of you, and you know, that goes a long way.
But you know what, it started with Mr. Schneider. It went down to Clarkie, and it went down to Homer, like, you know, and Chuck Fletcher is in the same mold, and you know, those guys, it's a rarity. Like, it's a huge business, the NHL, and it's a rarity in our league that the teams are taking care of their alumni like that. And again, I'm just lucky. Just happy that I ended up in Philly.
And like you said, it did start with Mr. Snyder. And same thing with my dad's injury. He's like, whatever I have to do, you know, we'll help you. And he, like you said, kept everything he said, and they did everything. They brought him on as the goalie coach. But Mr. Snyder was there through everything.
He was something. And these are only the stories we know. Imagine the one we don't know.
Even when we had Lou Scheinfeld on, we heard some, you know, learned a lot of stuff about him that I never knew, and just incredible man. Absolutely incredible.
One question for you, Ian. A friend of mine, Brendan Brooks, he played, he was with the Red Wings. He was St. Louis, but he said when he went to camp in L.A., you were a big impact on him, and you were, you know, you really helped him out. I just wanted to, you remember Brendan Brooks at the LA camp?
I do remember.
Okay.
Bagley. I do remember. Right, man, I was there for 9 years, man. Like, I wish a lot of guys come and go, but that's one thing, like, I learned, speaking of LA, like, you know, Luke Robitaille is a good friend of mine, I played with the Rangers first, and after we played in LA for years, and it was always like, you know, treat everybody the same. Don't be that guy. Like, you know, when guys come to camp, you might know them, they don't have a chance to make the team, but treat everybody right. Treat people like you'd like to be treated. And, you know, I'm still using that advice later in life at 40 now, and it, you know, it helps me in life, and I believe in that. You know, especially in today's world, be kind to people, and people are going to be kind to you. And that's what I did. Even when I played, I was always respectful to everybody. When the puck dropped, was a different story. But in the locker room and around the rink, I tried to take his advice to a T.
Yeah. Well, you had an impact on Brendan, and he ended up playing pro over in Europe and was with Adirondack, and a great hockey player, wasn't a very big guy, but he just remembers, you know, you really, you know, being great to him in that LA camp. So you had an impact on a lot of guys. You had a good impact on him. So that's amazing.
Sometimes that's the best always ones. Nice. People like in little moments like that, where we all have stories about my dad, someone that my dad, like, obviously he had an impact on Pelly. We know that, but like, it's those stories where someone you didn't even realize something you said or did that impacted their life or career. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's right there. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah,
it's better than the alternative. I can send that guy with it.
Yeah, well, I've never heard, speaking of, you said never say a bad word about Paul. I've never heard a bad word about you ever. at all.
Oh, like, I'm sure. Trust me, I'm sure there's a couple on there. But it's okay. I can't live with that.
Well, they're not. Never heard a bad
word. Never heard a bad word in English. Let's put it that way. Yeah. You mentioned you have kids. Do you have any boys that play hockey?
I do. Yeah. Well, my oldest, he's 19 now. He played hockey all his life, and now he's a college boy, and he stopped. It, you know, he's just a big passionate kid who loves his teammates and loves to be at the rink. And, you know, it's different. It's pressure. Like, you know what? He's carrying my name, and I wasn't Bernie. I wasn't Bernie, but I did play a long time, and everywhere we'd go, people would make a comment like, you know, you're not like your dad. You know, and I don't think it got to him, but at one point like that, I'm going to focus on school, and I'm proud of him. Like, he's hardworking. His grades are up. His grades are great. I mean, and he's a great kid. And I got another one who's he's a 17-year-old. He picked lacrosse. He's really passionate about lacrosse. And he's got one more year of high school, and after he's going to go play college.
Yeah,
and I got two great boys, and I'm lucky. And there's one. There's my big boy. Yeah, I'm just proud of both of them.
It's funny. The same thing happened to my brother. With the pressure and the last name, and where he finally was,
he
like
played the same position.
Yeah,
he
did. Yeah. He eventually moved to D because of that. And but same thing. He's like, I just want to have fun with it. Like, there was just. It was
and
so
that's
much,
okay too.
Yeah,
I've never, absolutely. I've never been the dad who'd be like, and my dad was like that with me. He never played, but he never forced me. He always suggests, and I did that with my oldest. You know, if you want to get better, if you want to get faster, do this, do that. If you don't, well, it's your choice. And it worked out for me. It didn't work out for him, but at the end of the day, as long as they're happy what they're doing, just I'm happy as a dad.
And that's the best thing you can do for them. And I mean, just seeing your pride in them and stuff, says more than anything.
I am proud of those.
And now your younger son, are they in the finals or they're in the playoffs?
They're in the playoffs now. Yeah, they won their first game yesterday and they're playing tomorrow again. And you saw that on Instagram.
I did,
Tomorrow's a tougher game. Yesterday was a little bit easy. Tomorrow they had a 6 o'clock, 6 a.m. practice this morning. And tomorrow they have another big match and I'll be there to watch for sure.
Nice.
It's fun. I love it. I love lacrosse because I know enough to enjoy it. And I don't know too much to complain about you should have done this, you should have done this. If I watch a hockey game, it's a different story. But when I watch lacrosse, I can sit there and enjoy and, you know, cheer for all the kids out there.
And Corey's dad played lacrosse professionally.
Yeah, well, when my dad was playing for the Leafs, he was flying he was flying to Philly and playing pro lacrosse for the Philadelphia Wings. And he would fly back, and Borya Salming used to drive him to the games. And driving to the game, my dad would ask Boris, he didn't even know who we're playing tonight. Because my dad would be playing lacrosse, pro lacrosse during the day, and then he'd be playing for the Leafs at night. And Ballard finally said, you know what? Enough's enough.
You have to pick one of the two. Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Wow, I didn't know that.
But, and so my dad, he's in the Lacrosse Hall of Fame, the Ontario, the Canadian.
Okay.
And he still holds the record for the fastest three goals ever. He scored 3 goals in 11 seconds in the Minto Cup.
That's cool. I didn't know
that. It's a great sport. I get to learn every day. I learn a little bit more. It's a great sport. Love it.
Yeah. And that's field, right? Do they have box lacrosse?
No, they do have box lacrosse, but he does play field. That's what he plays. Okay. Yeah. And his high school and his club team, they all feel. He did play a little bit of box lacrosse for his skills. You know, it helps out. Yeah. But he's a long pole meaty, and that's his position. And it's great when it's nice out, which it is in Jersey in the summer. You sit there with your chair and you just enjoy a beautiful day and you watch your boy play.
Yeah.
Even on the beach, just throwing the ball around, and it's great for eye hand coordination. I tell all my guys that, you know, Brendan Shanahan was a big lacrosse player too back
big time. John Tavares to Joe Sakic, like name it. There's a lot of guys who really good lacrosse.
Yeah, back. Joe Neuendijk.
You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
I went to a Wings game once, and that crowd is passionate.
It's rough.
They are passionate.
It's a crazy
game. Like the Bullies. Like the Broad Street Bullies.
I watch it and I'm like, is there any rules? Like, there's obviously no cross. Like, you can cross check till the cows come home. You can whack a guy with your stick till whenever he drops his stick because he broke his arm. Yeah. But it's we joke. It's a tough game.
Rough.
Yeah,
it is a tough game, and the cross checks. You just there's rules about your cross check. But you can extend your arms. You get to start close to the body. I learned that yesterday, actually.
Oh,
and, yeah, and there's rules, which I love it. It's a great sport, and I'm just happy my son picked that over football.
Yeah, good. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
And you, just to go on you on more of your personal life, you started with all the triathlons and the Ironman stuff. What got you into all that? Because I know, I mean, you are so like healthy and just, I mean, in I incredible yeah. shape. And I mean, to be able to like, yeah. I could never, I'm very big on health and exercise and all that, but I don't never attempt a triathlon. It could
never happen. Well, it's you built yourself up like I didn't. Right. Overnight, I didn't decide to do one. I did the Philly Marathon, and when I retired, I was looking for something to keep my mind and my body engaged. And I really do feel working out is great for my head. Like, you know, I've had a bunch of concussion in my career, and I feel like I got to keep my body going, mm-hmm. keep my head straight. And I was looking for a challenge, and I trained for the LA Marathon first. I got a little injury there. I couldn't make it. And after, I'm like, I'm going to train for the Philly Marathon. I really want to do one of those. My wife did one years ago. And I'm like, I got to do one. I got to beat her time. And and I trained for Philly. I did Philly Marathon. And I was training with my group of friends there. And here in where I'm at in South Jersey, all I got a bunch of buddies who do triathlons, they do a marathon, and I did my time, and they look online and they text me, they're like, great job on one of my friends text me, great job on the marathon, but can you do 2.4 mile swim, 110 mile bike ride, and finish with a marathon? And I was like, at the time I was doing player development, which when you do that, you do have a lot of free time. You go to see the young guys, but the games are at night. You go in the morning, see them in the morning a little bit, and you go see a game at night. You get all afternoon to train. I'm like, you know what? Yeah, you know, I'll challenge myself and try to do one. And I did it, and you know what? It's it was great. Like, I struggled for 12 hours, but it was something that I'll never forget. And maybe down the road, I'll do another one. But I did 4 half Ironman and 1 full one. And it was something that you're proud of. Like, a lot of things I did in my career, I'm proud of. And, you know, like, my family, I'm proud of. But just crossing that line is something that I can put in there, being proud of all the effort and the work and just the people around. Everybody's doing it. You see all kind of people, tall, short, a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller, but everybody's got a goal. It's to finish. You know, right. The pros want to beat their time. They want to finish first. I knew I wasn't going to win. But just to train 9 months and to cross that finish line was something I'll never forget.
Did you beat your wife's time in the marathon?
I did. I did a 3:42 marathon in Philly, and she did the LA at 4 something. She's in better shape. Like she's a CrossFitter now. She I'm more like a long distance guy now, running, I bike, but she's in really good shape.
Yeah, see, I like that same stuff. I like the hit. The interval stuff, the start stop, as opposed to the long distance and things like that.
Yeah, I'm the other way around. I like to go, and again, I go back. It's good for my mind. Like I put my headphones on, I listen to podcasts. I'm a big Joe Rogan fan.
Oh yeah,
and yeah. I just go for my runs, and it goes fast. It's good. Again, it's I know people say all the time, like, you know, it's good when you're healthy. It helps you think right and direct. I believe in that big time.
So have you had a lot of, from all your concussions, you have any symptoms from that still that linger? So I know we talked to Mark Howe, and he said he had a bunch. So he eats and exercise and all that to keep his brain healthy. And he has Alzheimer's and stuff in his family, too. But do you still have things that affect you today from your concussions?
It's my blurry vision in my right eye. When I took that puck to the eye there, that's a damaged nerve. I got a cataract in the back. That's because of the impact, and I do have blurry vision. But I'm on the doctors here on top. I got a check a couple of weeks ago, and that's the thing with the Flyers there. It's amazing, like, you know, and when you're retired, they'll find the best doctor to make mm-hmm. sure you're okay. And Jim McCrossin helped me out doing that, and I can thank him enough too. Like, he makes sure, like, you know, you give your body to hockey, but after hockey, they'll be there to help you out, make sure you're gonna have a quality life afterwards.
Yeah, it's a shame. After my dad's injury, if it happened, Now they would have been able to correct it with laser, but back then his peripheral vision was screwed up, so obviously he can't play goal, and they didn't have the surgeries that they do now for that. But same thing, you know, the Flyers were there with him through all of that too, obviously.
Yeah, it's we're lucky to live, you know. I know the world's not perfect, but we live in the right time when you do have injuries or scans, or you know, they can check whatever before it's too late.
So when you had, when that hit happened, like, do you do you not remember what was going on?
I do. Or,
yeah.
I remember.
What was your experience through that?
Not great.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Actually, the first one I took in the mouth was more painful. Like, I lost 8 teeth and I broke the bone in, right below my nose there. And the second one is the one who may obviously... and more damage from it. I went down again, like I've probably done 1,000 times in my career. And Paul Martin was at the point, and he probably got nervous and tried to put it in the corner instead of put it on net, and he put it right under my eye. Which I'm, you know, and looking back, I'm just lucky not to have lost my eye, and I still see fine. But I just, when I took that puck, it went dark, like it went like, and the big. Big sound, like, you know, like it's beeping in your face, like in your head, like crazy, like it was like forever. And I tried to get up, and Jimmy was right next to me, and I just grabbed him. I'm like, is my eyeball still there? That was my first word. Like, I'm like, I lost my eye. I'm gonna be blind from my eye. I was 36 at the time, and he grabbed me, looked at me. He's like, no, it's still there. Let's go in the room. And we went in the room. I lay on the table there, and it was the world was spinning for me. Like it, I had positional vertigo. I didn't know at the time, obviously, but I found out afterwards. I got up and the room was spinning. And again, go back to Mr. Schneider. He was one of the first one right next to me. And he was like, you know, making sure, you know, he was making sure his player was all right. And that I'll never forget. And again, I went to see Guy Lindsay, our doctor, to make sure I didn't break any bones. And when they did that CT scan or whatever scan they did, that's when they saw I had bleeding in my brain. And that's where they put a stop to everything. They're like, listen, because for me, I was playing the next series. There's no way I was going to miss that. I knew it was going to be my last chance to play. And to play for a Stanley Cup. And Guy's like, you can't play. You can do anything. If you ride the bike and it start flaring up there, you'll die right on the spot.
Oh, wow.
If you go on the ice, same thing. And I sit on my couch for the Boston series. It was like 3 weeks. After 3 weeks, I went to do another CT scan, and the blood was dry. It was still there, but dry. And I saw a couple. I saw a guy in Pittsburgh. I saw a guy in Philly, a neurologist. And they told me, listen, if you don't have any symptoms, you can play. That won't do anything. Which I did have symptoms. I had dizziness. I had the vertigo. But I'm like, F it. I got to play. And I told them, like, I'm fine. I don't have any dizziness. I'm fine. And I came back in the Montreal series. I didn't play much. I was there. Like, Lavi used me more like to bring some emotion sometimes out of the guys, you know, going through this, blah, 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 like coaches usually do. But I didn't sleep well before the first game, though. Like, you know, you're in bed, you're thinking about your family. You're like, well, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? And when you play like that, you can't really play at your ice level. And, you know, I didn't make a difference. And, you know, I played, I blocked shots, I tried to do my best. But unfortunately, we came out short against Chicago. But it wasn't a great experience. But again, I look back, I'm like, yeah, maybe those two pucks weren't a great experience, but it's probably part of the reason why I'm still with the Flyers.
You
know, like, and then go on notice with, you know, Clarkey, Homer, and Mr. Schneider. And I really believe it helps me, you know, having a job with the team.
Now, how was your wife when you decided to go back and play? Like, how was she feeling about that?
She told me more than one time, you got to make sure you know what you're doing. You got to make sure. And, you know, at one point she knew, like, she didn't want to annoy me because she knew I had to focus on the game, and she kind of let it go. But I'm sure she, if you ask her, I'm sure she was nervous seeing me out there and trying to do my style of play, which that's the thing. Like, I couldn't go out there and be a light player and just try to make fancy plays. But that wasn't my game. My game was to block shots, hit people, and And I tried to do my best, and unfortunately, we came out short.
What a run that was. I swear, like to this crazy day, I swear my son, he's 11, almost 12, and I took him, he was a newborn, to those games, and they didn't have like these ear protectors when he was little, I swear. I messed up his ears. Like, he sometimes gets sensitive to real loud noises. It was so loud.
That's because of us.
Yeah. It was so loud in there, but it was incredible. It was such, I mean, but that last goal with Chicago, like, we didn't even know they scored. It was just like, what just happened?
Knew. On the bench, we knew. Just a guy like Patrick King doesn't jump around just for fun.
Right.
Like, those guys know when they score. They see the hole, and you're like, eesh, you know, it's... It was a great run, trust me. It was my last year, obviously. A great bunch of guys. We didn't, you know, the season wasn't smooth, if people remember.
Like, just
you
got know, in, we had to just go on, squeaked in, yeah.
We had to go on a stretch, and that last game was important.
Yep.
You know, we went to shootout, it was crazy, but
was
we
insane.
Went in the playoffs and with momentum, and it really helped us out. And we had great leaders, like, you know, Richie and Chris Pronger and, you know, Jeff Carter. Those guys were, Briere and Giroux was a younger guy, but it was just a great year. It was fun.
That must have been a heartbreaker at the end there, especially to...
Especially, I knew that I was done.
Like, right.
I knew it. Like, I didn't want to admit it. I'm like, I'll go back in the summer. I'll shake those, which I've done in the past too, like in prior years that I've had symptoms. I play through it towards the end of the year, and I'm like, I'll go home and those symptoms are going to go away by you know, stopping getting hit all the time. And they usually did. And that last year they did it, and that was worse. I'm like, okay, it's worse than I thought. And I had to make the call, which was the hardest call in my life.
I'm sure.
But I'm glad I did, because I'm healthy and I can have a quality life after hockey, which is always a worry of mine.
And you get to coach and still be a part of the team and just in a different aspect.
I'm still around the league, around the game, which I love.
Yeah.
And I'm just happy to work with everybody, young guys especially. I feel comfortable working with, young guys and older guys too, but it's a little bit different when guys been in the league for 15 years working with those guys than younger guys.
Well, it's funny that happened with my dad with Pelly, because he worked with Pelly and then Hexy came in, and it's kind of like his, not only was his style so different, but, you know, he was a little older. So it was more of like, you know, what can I really?
Generation.
Yeah.
Different like, generation.
So
yeah.
different. Although Chico did say at the end of his career, he was in Philly. My dad was the goalie coach. And obviously, you know, I mean, Chico had played a whole career, one cup, all that. So like he's like, but your dad told me one thing about just putting his weight on what foot to put the weight on when having to shift and all this kind of stuff, like just a little tweak. And so Chico was like, I had a game. I'm like, let me just try this. Let me try what Bernie said. And he's like, damn it. Why didn't he tell me this? Like back when I played for the Islanders, and he was ready to retire.
Why didn't he tell my dad that?
I don't think he's telling anybody.
I got another one for you guys. Like you're talking about that. And those older guys sometimes like, and I'll be the same way, like in years to come. But if you don't stick around the game, you kind of lose touch with the game. You know, the game's changing. The game is way faster,
so
way
different.
Better than when I played. It's way faster than way, you know, better skills than when your dad's played.
Sure.
But guys like your dad and guys like Clarkey, I remember Clarkey 3 years ago came on the ice. He was skating around. Last Winter Classic he played, he skated on the ice just to get back in shape a little bit. And he grabbed the centerman at the end of the practice. I always work with the centerman to work on face off. And he came over and he just gave a little pointer to Sean Couturier about his weak side elbow when he take a face off there, how to position that elbow just to give him a little bit more strength. And it's funny because this year, Coots mentioned that. It stuck with him. He was showing Leshinsky how to take face off and help him up. And he showed him that. And I looked at him, I'm like, that's from Clarkey 3 years ago. I was like, yeah, I remember. It really helped me. My point is like when guys think, you know, they watch a game and they stay around the game, they will adjust and they will understand. They do have the experience, but they'll understand what guys need. And just that example from Clarkey and a guy like Sean Couturier, who was a Selke winner, who was a great player, take that little advice and it worked. I mean, it's something to say about your dad and Clarkey. They see what we're dealing with every day and they know what might help our players.
Well, even for the players to take the advice or even try it out, because a lot of people, you know, I've been playing this long. And so for them to even take the advice and try it says a lot.
Usually the great players do that. Mm-hmm. The guys that are too cool for school, they're like, I don't need that. But the great players, that's one thing. Like, great players are guys that are committed to the sport. They learn from everybody around them. Like, I remember, like, I wasn't Joe Sacking by any means, but I played with Joe in Colorado, and I looked around, and he's doing that stretching routine. I'm like, holy cow, if it's working for him, I'm going to ask him. Mm-hmm. I went to him. I'm like, what do you do? And he gave me a DVD that the guy was following. And again, you got to learn. Same with coaching. Right now, I went through 3 head coaches here in Philly. I learned through everybody, good things and bad things. I wouldn't do that if I was a head coach. I will do that if I am a coach. Right. You know, like it's like you gotta learn with people that from people around you, and that's what a guy like Sean Couturier does.
It's funny, but something my dad always says: whether it's hockey, you learn from the great. If you want to learn how to garden, see what the best gardener is doing. You know, and to surround yourself with the best.
That's common sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to be willing to learn.
I wanted to ask you too, Ian, my dad retired out in Colorado, so I pretty much grew up out there. I was curious, what part of Colorado did you live in?
We were in Lone Tree.
Okay, yeah. I was in Evergreen. I was in Evergreen, and then I played my minor hockey at Denver University. I was a junior pioneer.
Okay, Cherry Hills, nice. Yeah. What a city. I love Denver.
Yeah.
Great quality of life. Like, you want a bike? You want to run, you want to do outdoor stuff, you can't. And I loved it. We loved it. You know, I can't say enough good thing about Denver. Yeah. We had a great time there.
Well, I've been spending some time down in Beach Haven right now in Long Beach Island. But when my dad played in Philly, we lived in Cherry Hill. So I love this area, and I'm trying to make the move down here. And yeah, it's a beautiful spot. How were you, just because you're with the Flyers and stuff? It was just a spot you picked in Jersey, or?
I did not pick that spot. No. When I was a free agent, Danny Briere's a friend of mine. He was a friend of mine before I played with him. And, you know, as typical free agent who comes in town, you ask the guys, you know, where should I live with 2 kids? He's like, I'm in Haddonfield, no big deal. Haddonfield, best place to live for kids, and a great school system. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Taxes are crazy, but I don't regret the move. I think that
it's worth it. It's a great town. Benefit. Yeah.
It is a great town. Just a little downtown there, and people are so nice here. And my kids, we've been here for 12 years. They have friends. That's home for them. And the school system was amazing, or still amazing for my youngest. I'm glad we made that move. It's a great place to live.
And it's such a great area, just as far as the beach is right around the corner. New York, Washington, the city, the
Jersey's
mountains.
Jersey's got a bad rap. New Jersey's got a bad rap. Like, you know, coming from Montreal, you think Jersey Shore.
Right.
Not good.
Snuggy.
But like you said, Kim, like you're an hour away from, an hour 30, depends on how traffic is, from New York. You're an hour 30 from the beach. Washington's not too far. Like, it's such
the Poconos.
Obviously, Philly, the Poconos, it's such a great location for a lot of things. And Philly Airport will take you wherever you want to go. Yep. And it's just, it's a great place to live.
It's funny you mentioned about Montreal, because my relatives, when they would come down in the summer, I would get so embarrassed, because on the beach, they were literally wearing socks with sandals and the little Speedos. And my one uncle had this big wild mustache, and like, they would come tromping down the beach.
That's your people, Kim. That's your people.
Now I appreciate it more than when I was younger.
Yeah. I've never wore Speedos, for the record. Just want to put that out there.
I hope my dad never has. And I hope if he did, I never.
I don't know. Maybe your dad has.
I don't know.
We'll dig up some dirt.
Yeah.
Well, we so appreciate you coming and talking to us. And I don't know if you have, I know you've already said real quick, just, you know, how much you love my dad. I don't know if you have like a particular memory of him or Corey's dad when he played or anything before we go, that, you know.
Memories of him, like, I'll be honest, I've never seen him play. I'm not that old. And like, I a little bit, I was a little guy.
You're a little younger than me, so.
Yeah.
And when I came to Philly, like, obviously French people, we kind of, we go towards each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's normal. Yeah. It's in our blood. That's our first language. And for me, I saw Bernie. I'm like, holy cow, that's Bernie. I never saw him play, but I knew Bernie Perron. Mm-hmm. You know, from back home. I'm like, that's Bernie Perron. And fair enough, you know, your dad, Hello, my little guy. I'm like, oh, it is Bernie. I dress that my first, you know, when people say first impressions goes a long way. Well, he gave me the warmest welcome to Philly, like the biggest hug like I've had since I've been here. And I'm just a huge fan of the human being. Yes, you know, I know he was a great player, and I play with good player, but usually the great player I play with are great people. And, and your dad is right on, he's on top of that list. He's just a great man. And you should feel lucky that he's your dad.
And those hugs are healing. And those hugs make every problem in the world disappear. They're awesome hugs.
Sure. Yeah. And it made me feel welcome. You know, he welcomed me to Philly just by his big hug and his big smile. And you learn from that.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be treated like that. And guess what? I won't hug as hard as he does, but right. You know, I'll make people feel better, you know, around me, which is it's a little thing, and you know, we need more of that in today's world.
For sure. And have you ever met Corey's dad in any golf tournaments or?
Probably at the alumni tournament for sure. Like you know, I'm sure your dad's in the same boat. We made he never hugged me about that.
I don't know. With him about giving him a good hug next time.
I don't know. Next golf tournament, you should run and give me a big hug. I'll remember.
You might see him on the golf course. I always joke. Bobby Orr used to always bug him and said, "You're a way better golfer than you were a goalie." So you might run into him at the sandbagging at an alumni. Yeah. So, anyway,
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming on. That's huge for me.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And hopefully now that things are getting back to normal in our world a little bit, I'll get to see him in person because it's been a while. But
Thank you so much. It's normal. Like now we don't need masks.
Is it crazy?
Most of the places. It's great. It's weird though. I went to Wegmans the other day and I'm looking, I walk with a mask. I'm looking around. There's some people with no mask. I'm like, all right, I'll take my mask off. I took it off, but I felt naked.
Yes. I was at Whole Foods, same thing. I'm like, do I wear it? Don't I wear it? Do I? And I'm looking around at everybody
else.
Always
one in the pocket just in case somebody gives me the dirty.
Yeah.
Well, the government's looking for me right now in Canada. They don't know I've left the country.
Yeah, it's still bad up there.
It's bad up there.
That's another, I know I talked to my mom. That's another animal there. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I'm down in the
States, enjoy our freedom down here for now.
Smart man.
Yeah. Smart man.
All right. Okay, well, good luck to your son in the playoffs. I hope they do great. And it was awesome to see you.
All right. Say hi to the family. And thanks for having me, guys. It was great.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye. Have a good day.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
The Perrant Favelle Generation X podcast is powered by
Biscuit Tees and Favelle Fitness,
bringing you unique comfort and style while optimizing a healthy, organic lifestyle.